there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
All right, I got to pause for a moment, Dr. Batar, and wish another doctor happy birthday. Dr. Ron Paul. Ron Paul's birthday today. This guy is a modern-day founding father, a real statesman, and someone who is principled, and it's the anomaly in politics. But again, shout-out to Ron Paul. Obviously, we appreciate him and all that he has done to bring the cause of liberty out into the open, especially for the next generation. With that, Dr. Rashid Batar, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm exhausted from the trip. We got out west here, and 2.5 days later, I'm flying to Michigan, back to the old time zone. And then 30 hours later, I'm flying back at night. I'm like, honestly, you're not supposed to actually answer it when somebody asks if how you're doing. But I take that Dr. Batar really means it when he asks me that. So pretty bad. But no, I'm recovering. I'm on the mend. Thanks for asking.
It's actually funny because I remember my sophomore or junior year, I think it was right before I started clinical rotations when I was in medical school. That was one of the things that one of the attending physicians had said. Never ask somebody, if they know you're a doctor, never ask how you're doing, because you will invariably lose a few hours of your life every day.
Yes.
Because if, you know, in passing, as you ask somebody, how are you, and they'll start telling you about this ailment or that ailment. So it's kind of funny that you said that. But no, I sincerely meant that.
Yes, I know. Yes. No. Honestly, it's just a lack of sleep, and I know a lot of people can deal with it better than. And of course, in your youth, you can tolerate a lot more. And I'm not saying it's super done set. Are you complaining of being old? No, I'm just, you know, you're realistic about life. You know how to pace yourself, and of course, you know the value of sleep and regeneration. And I don't want to, I don't want to abuse it. But sometimes, I committed to this a long time ago, and I was able to make it work despite the craziness of the schedule. And I'm glad I did, because it's always heartening and uplifting to get together with like-minded folks and help those that are truly seeking sincerely for answers to their problems, or in this case, to prevent the problems from happening in the first place.
No, it really is a great thing that they were doing out in Michigan. And I talked to Steph, and I really appreciate it when people try to get that type of information out. So anytime anybody's trying to get good information out, as with that Michigan conference, and I know that it was a Herculean effort for you to have moved across the country and then 2 days later fly out. So job well.
Yeah, I got there. I didn't know where I was. I asked to confirm it. It was kind of funny, but that's the way we roll.
Rob.
What's that?
That sounds like me. Whenever I get to a conference, I don't know where I'm supposed to be. I just show up at the point where it's the stage, and I go there and do my thing, and then I leave. So that sounds like me. I never know where I'm at.
I know. I should stop emulating Dr. Batar. I will get lost constantly.
That's right.
But thankfully, the people around me and around you will help us to remember this is where you are, and you're right where you're supposed to be. And that's good, because you're listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show Advanced Medicine Hour, our special hour each and every week with Dr. Rashid Batar. Now, I want to open talking about an ER-related story, but you also sent us a story about measles outbreak, and I'm willing to roll with you either way you want to go today.
Yeah, we can, if you want, we can just wait on the measles outbreak in one of the shorter segments if you want. It's totally up to you.
Yeah,
interesting because, mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that waiting on the measles outbreak is good. That's a good example for people to not, we're not freaking out about it. We can wait on the measles outbreak. There's no panic here. What is interesting to me, and you've talked about it, you did rounds, of course, as an ER physician, and you had, extreme, I think, pretty intense work in like trauma surgery, things like that. And that's where we absolutely appropriate to praise and be grateful for the allopathic medical community, because they've made great strides in keeping people alive that would not in previous times. Here's a headline. It's on vaccineimpact.com. It says, our frontline emergency room doctors, the key to identifying vaccine injuries and reporting them. I thought, we got to ask Dr. Batar this question. This sounds really good.
So, I'm sorry, Robert, what's the, what I haven't read.
You don't have to read this. I'm asking you. You're an emergency room physician or having been one. Look back and say, all right, as an ER, what you're capable of doing in triaging and analyzing and assessing a crisis situation. Are frontline emergency room physicians the key to identifying vaccine injuries and reporting them?
I would think that primary care, pediatricians and family practice people would be more frontline than emergency room docs, because emergency room docs are, you know, you've got that golden hour. You're thinking about maintaining airway circulation, so it's ABC, airway breathing circulation. You know, you're looking at trying to decipher what's something that's going to take somebody's life in the next hour, next 15 minutes, versus something that's going to take a few days. Obviously, a person that has an infectious disease process, they can end up having a difficulty if they, if there's some kind of disease process or something going on. But the issue at hand is not whether they're the frontline people or not. For an ER doc, it's how much time do I have left before that person could potentially expire.
And
so
right.
When you're looking at vaccine injury type things, you know, those are usually like fever. They have the cold, flu type picture. They'll end up having maybe a breakout, some rashes. They could even have a seizure. And so from that perspective, maybe an ER doc, but I would think it would probably be more primary care physicians, and maybe secondarily it would be ER docs, but I would not think that it would probably be necessarily.
But how many, let's ask this question this way. How many ER docs would even know to identify if something, any of those symptoms you mentioned were happening in a child brought to them, like in an ER situation, would even think, was this child recently vaccinated? You know what I'm saying? I think they should know that, but do they?
You know, this is a really, really good point. I see now where you go with this point. And in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, there was actually in the whole surrounding area in Charlotte, there hadn't been a case of meningococcemia in I don't know how long. And I actually picked up two cases of meningococcemia in the Albemarle and Stanley County Memorial Hospital. And the only reason was because these kids had come on and seen the ER doc, they'd seen the primary care doctor, they saw an ER doc, and they came back within 24 hours and the symptoms had gotten worse. And it was like a classical case of meningococcemia. And the meningococcemia, within 24 to 36 hours, if it hasn't been identified and treated, the person's dead. And we ended up having two cases that came in, and both cases, it just was a perfect picture, perfect. It just happened to be at the right time at the right place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, both children ended up surviving, and it was fine. But, you know, how many, those children were both seen by two other ER docs prior to me, and I'm not saying that I was better than the other doc. I'm just saying that I just happened to have the perfect picture when they presented to me because of how rapid they progressed, so I was able to pick up on it. But most doctors, you're absolutely right. They're going to see it as a cold, flu, upper respiratory infection, whatever it is, worst case scenario, bronchitis, pneumonia, whatever. They're not going to really look at it from a vaccine injury perspective. And in this particular case, those are really glaring things, and it was still a potential that we could have missed those things. So you're right. ER docs not trained for that type of thing. I mean, they're trained to see something that's life-threatening. Unfortunately,
yeah.
In modern society, ERs are abused and people come in with mosquito bites. And
oh, yeah, yeah, of course. It's a mess there. Now, just a heads up, because this guy sounds interesting to me, this guy, David Denton Davis, Triple D, right? What a name. Former ER physician. He's got a book coming out that says, Who Can Parents Trust? Vaccines, Avoidable and Unsafe. So this is a doctor that clearly has opened his eyes and is willing to go into very controversial territory, you know, for a physician to come out and write a book like this.
Well, and it's obviously he's not the first or second or third physician that's written books like this. You know, you've got our friend Sherry Tempany, who's written all sorts of books about
right.
the dangers of vaccinations and looked at the Centers for Disease Control's own data and then deciphered and interpreted that data to show what the truth really is. So there's a lot of information out there like that already. I think what it comes down to is this constant state of misinformation that's perpetuated by.
Did we lose Dr. Bitar?
Sounds like it.
All right, try to get him back on. Listen, you know, these serious adverse events, again, the adverse event reporting system, the medical community has failed miserably. on identifying these things because they've been told that these things are rare. They're one in a million. And if you're told that, then you see these things happen, your immediate, for a concern for a child, is not, oh, was this child vaccinated? You'll go to anything else besides that. So, Dr. Bitar, I'm sorry we lost you, but there, I was just saying that if you're trained to believe that, you know, adverse events from vaccines are one in a million or one in a billion, whatever, you're not going to see what you're told isn't real. And I think a lot of physicians could. They're certainly capable of identifying it, but if they've been trained not to see it, they're not going to see it.
You're absolutely right, Robert. That is absolutely correct. You don't know what you don't know. So if you're not even aware that you're supposed to be looking for something like that, and you've actually been trained to think of it as something else, you're not going to pick up on it. You're absolutely right. And so for our listeners, and I know for our long-term listeners for the last 9 years, this is not new information, but for anybody who's listening to us new, I just want to say this. Robert's heard me say this numerous times. I think this is one of Robert's favorite things when I say, it's not that we are against vaccination. Right, Robert? I'm not against vaccination. We are against stupidity. We are anti-stupidity. We are not anti-vaxxers. We are anti-stupid.
Right. Yes.
And that's the difference. Why? Because if you start looking at how the immune system works, when the body develops its immunity, when the antibody antigen response actually takes place, at what point in the development, what the whole philosophy and theory behind vaccination is, how it's supposed to be introduced, how it's supposed to work, how it's supposed to help protect the people, then you start understanding all these fallacies, because the way the vaccine movement has been going forward, it's built upon, it's taking part facts and then coming up with semi-truth. So as an example, the study that I, or not study, but the article that I sent you about the European influx of measles, you know, it kind of goes into that, and we'll talk about that when we come up to the bottom of the hour or whenever you want to cover.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to cover it with you. I just think, like I said, it's fascinating. Again, they're not incapable of identifying these AERs, adverse events, and the report on them, but they've been taught that they're very, very rare. So if it's so rare, it's not your first thought, it's not your second or third thought. You're going to think everything else. And then if the parents say it's a vaccine and you've been programmed to believe that it's not, are you going to believe the parent or all of your programming? And again, very few doctors make it out and intact. Apparently this Dr. Davis has. And I'm grateful for it. Maybe we'll talk to him. And Dr. Bitar, of course, has for many years. That's why we do Advanced Medicine together here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Check out advancedmedicine.com. Archives available there for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of hours available to you for free, as well as GCN and iTunes and elsewhere. We'll be right back.
The revolution will be broadcast.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Willing to go where the truth takes him, here's Robert.
All right, Advanced Medicine continues here with Dr. Rashid Bitar every week. And advancedmedicine.com, robertscottbell.com. Links are up in the show notes. Upcoming events are there as well. And we were talking, of course, ER docs, their identification or lack thereof of adverse events. And Dr. Bitar on the break, for those of you watching on YouTube, went into a detailed explanation of what vaccines are trying to mimic in terms of a normal interaction with the so-called external world in terms of addressing pathogens, is what they're called. But we also know that pathogens are not necessarily the cause of the disease. They could be the result of it, and they can manifest from within, right? We have everything in our body that could rise up and kill us. Why doesn't it? Because of a healthy balance due to a decent lifestyle enough and the resilience of creation itself to adapt to circumstances. Now, this moves from... go ahead.
That's an important part, Robert, because the body, what the design behind vaccines is supposed to be, is exactly how the body was designed by the ultimate creator to work. So there's no problem with that. It's what they're introducing as the foreign substance to elicit that immune response and what they do to it. That's where the problem is. It's not the concept of vaccine that has an immune system, which we know how that works. By the way, it's interesting that when I started hitting that point, Facebook turned it off again, locked me out again. Of course, I'm back on it again, but it's interesting. So it's the strangest of how it stops that feed, it's going beyond coincidence now.
No, there's an algorithm. So, you know, this is what we are finding. And whether it be YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, they're finding ways to counter with their so-called official stories. They don't like vaccine discussion, but we've got to do it. And I think this is a very intelligent and important discussion to have. Now, you sent this article, and we've heard about this so-called measles outbreak in the United States. That's already been, quote-unquote, debunked, because the CDC has said there's no unusual outbreak. This is normal, whatever's happening. I don't know about Europe. Is there a genuine outbreak happening in Europe? Have you looked into this?
I haven't looked into it, but it was a story that was brought to my attention. And I think it's important to mention it, because there are people that are being misinformed about this issue as well. So I don't know the details of the European study, but or the European article as far as outbreaks in Europe. They do talk about how there's 23,000 cases in the Ukraine, and they're talking about how since 2016, the population that's supposed to be vaccinated for measles, they want, the goal is to have over a 95%, I think, population
right.
vaccination. If you don't, then apparently you can have breakthroughs. And they were talking about how this has changed since 2016. Yes, in the article, they mentioned that from 2016 to 2017, it went from 96% to 97% coverage. But then they said there was isolated pockets within different communities that had only 70% vaccination. Now, my point would be, whether you have 95% or 70%, if you have 23,000 cases of vaccinations, 23,000 cases of measles that have occurred in one country, you may need to look at what's going on. I would want to see how many of those people were actually vaccinated, and then go further and do a titer and see what type of measles is actually causing this. As you remember in the Disneyland breakout,
yes.
There was a doctor that actually went and did the titers and found that the measles that were supposedly, you know, the big cause that everybody was getting all upset about,
right.
was actually not the wild type measles that you would expect, but in fact, a man-made synthetic version that's used for vaccinations, a synthesized version.
Right, the vaccine strain.
To be used. Yeah. Exactly, a vaccine yeah. strain. And so there's no way that that would be causing a breakout of measles, unless those individuals have been vaccinated with the vaccine strain. And so that breakout was caused by the indiscriminate use and the improper use of vaccinations.
Yeah, but it doesn't meet their goal, their stated goal of 95, 94, 97, 98, whatever it is, they make it up as they go. As we find out, their claims of herd immunity are made up as well. Much less, again, the standard response should be, if your vaccines work, why do you care how many people get it? Well, they admit then that they don't always work, and therefore you're coasting on those that do. But my gosh, there's got to be more complexity than just antibodies. And by the way, they should now follow on for all of those kids that got measles, real measles, apparently, in Europe. How many of them down the road don't get cancer? As they've admitted in the peer-reviewed journals, that there is an adaptive response to a measles incident that helps your immune system to mature so that you're less likely to have other diseases.
Exactly. It matures it, it exposes it, it trains it, it allows it to function. And that adaptogenic response is a very important thing to take into consideration, not just from human physiology, but from an evolutionary standpoint as well.
Yeah. This is a big story in that regard. You'll only hear more of it. And rather than being afraid of measles, start embracing it. And listen, we've got strategies, we've got substances, we've got energies to make it milder for you. Any child, including homeoprophylaxis, as well as homeopathic remedies, silver, immunomodulators, things that can get these kids through it like we went through it, like my kids went through it, and they're stronger because of it. Hey, when we come back, Battle Royale, opioids versus cars versus guns. Who kills more?
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott the Bell Robert Show. Scott Bell Show.
All right, 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, one special hour a week. We have Dr. Rasha Bhattar doing advanced medicine. And remember, you can get out of the public domain and learn even more when you go to advancedmedicine.com. Special invitation code to be part of the private club, so to speak. And you can be a member for a dollar for life thanks to the invitation code we have here. 1358, 1358 is the number. Write it down. Go there. Be part of it. And if you're not sure where, go to robertscottbell.com. Super Don has all the links up. Dr. Bitar, so we like to put perspective on what's really dangerous in terms of health and healing and disease and all of that. And we have another story here, and this one's interesting because we are very strong proponents of the right to keep and bear arms. We believe that that right does not come from government, even though there's a Second Amendment. It doesn't say, oh, government gave you the right to keep and bear arms. No, that comes from God. And yet there's so much information, oh, how dangerous guns are. What about driving in a car, taking a car and moving it around? Yeah, there's danger to it. Certainly a lot of people die in traffic accidents. But what about FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs? Some have argued in the peer-reviewed literature, third leading cause of death. Now, one specific aspect of those drugs, or one specific category of those drugs, are known as opioids. And if you were to guess which one causes more death between cars and guns and opioids, I don't even think it's a close contest.
No, it's not. It's not. In fact, this is if you go back and you start looking at all the antipsychotic, antidepressant, all of that class of drugs, the opioids, the analgesics, all these different, the anxiolytic drugs, when you start looking at that category, it dwarfs everything else. In fact, just one subcategory within that category of neurological pharmaceuticals, or pharmaceuticals designed to affect the neurology, which is the antidepressants, one out of every two Americans at some point will be treated with an antidepressant. So now you start looking at the opioids, the anxiolytics. These are drugs that are just, they cause exponentially more deaths than any of those other things that you mentioned, Robert.
Yeah, so let's see. I mean, the rate of overdose is climbing. It's even though there's a lot of a conscious effort to reduce it, we've covered certain areas where there's some evidence of decline in states where the cannabinoids are more available to people with or without a prescription, right? Because they're not causing people to die or become heavily addicted. So there is some good news, but not in this overall case where they're saying, you know, we're going the wrong direction, according to addiction experts. And I don't know, Super Don, have you found the numbers or percentages how much worse opioids are than car accident deaths and gun-related injuries or deaths? Because, again, they're saying the opioids are worse.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I can find the exact data on that. But they did say that that it's worse than guns or car crashes. And I think it's interesting in the environment that we're in right now, where there's a lot of talk about people wanting to, you know, we got to ban the guns, right? If we ban the guns, then people won't die.
Right.
Yet, where's the banning of the opioids, right?
Sure. Or any of the other things. Like, you know, if we think, and it's not just a made-up thing, that modern medicine and all of its drug trappings are the third or second or first leading cause of death, depending on how you run the numbers. If dietary supplements, if certain food categories were the third, second, or first leading cause of death, would they not be banned? I mean, what does that tell you about the bias built into our so-called protective system of governance?
Well, it's working, Robert. They're protecting the manufacturers of the opioids and that class of drugs. So they're protecting them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's regulatory capture, folks. If you think that the Fear and Death Administration is about protecting you, you are delusional. You're probably on an opioid. So anyway, we try to get through all of that. Now, getting people off of these things, I mean, Dr. Bitar, I recognize, like with all drugs, we've talked about it, there may be a viable way to use them in a crisis. But as you've said so many times, you put them on it, you get them off of it as fast as possible. Long-term use is not it's not the way they were initially designed, and unfortunately that's become the default position for so many of these drugs.
You're absolutely right. You know, you need to use a medication for a short period of time. It's an emergent type thing. It's something that the person may need some assistance for a short period of time, but as soon as you go beyond 7 to 10 days, you know, I mean, the worst possible case, I can see somebody maybe needing something for a few weeks, 2-3 weeks. I can't see any use for any drug for more than 30 days, Robert, at all. Because at that point, you're starting to make a dependency. The physiology is becoming dependent on it, and you're violating certain negative inhibitory feedback loops at that point. Especially when you start looking at things like analgesics, right? When somebody's got a lot of pain and they're taking something, and you start training or down-regulating your pain receptor size by taking some of these narcotics and opioids and such, you know, you're not creating that. Those addictions are nothing more than an altered physiology. And that's why the body becomes dependent on them. So there's other aspects to this. You know, just we see the dependency aspect, and that's what society says is wrong, and of course it is wrong, and it affects the body in certain ways, but all the other deleterious things that are taking place is secondary to that addiction. I mean, it's violating physiology. To me, that those type of use of those type of drugs indiscriminately more than a week, it's the same thing as like smoking or mm-hmm. doing any other vice, because you're altering physiology in an undesired way. You know, it's not desired to alter the physiology that way.
Right. So we go to where? The mainstream media to learn about drugs, right? Because they report accurately on all peer-reviewed literature, and all peer-reviewed literature is without question solid, right? Of course, all of these things, we point out the absurdities of both of these things. And now we have a newspaper on business. A lot of times it's like the Wall Street Journal. They're reporting on the business of disease, which is business. This is coming from the Business Standard, maybe even out of India here. Yeah, it's out of India, but through Boston. And they're referring to antidepressants. Studies now, they're making claims that they may counter the effects of brain aging. Now, my opinion here is that they're desperately trying to distract from the devastating consequences of relying on these brain chemistry altering drugs for which they have no physiological test to determine that there's a lack of it. You know, even the whole SSRIs, they don't have an analysis of the brain to say, well, we definitely have a serotonin issue here, right? And yet they give these things, so now they're going for a second thing. Well, maybe it'll help your brain to age more slowly.
Yeah, you know, if you want to have your brain age more slowly, start doing a Sudoku puzzle every day, increase the level of difficulty, play a game of chess, and take a walk every day, and partake in some type of exercise. That's going to do a lot more than any drug that's going to manipulate your serotonin uptake or you know, manipulate your neurochemistry.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, we talk about nutritional, you know, issues, silica, we talk about essential fats and even saturated fats being important, cholesterol being important for brain and neurological health, and they of course still want to put you on a drug to reduce something that is neuroprotective in the body, cholesterol, and so many people still buy it, so many doctors and so many of the people haven't gotten the memo yet that even their own studies show the failure of cholesterol-lowering medications to be beneficial even in preventing heart attacks, much less the deleterious impact they have on the brain and nervous system. Now they have the audacity, that's another word of the day, audacity, to claim that taking an SSRI is somehow going to slow the aging of your brain.
Yeah, it's just a preposterous claim, but of course people are looking for the quick fix. So it does appeal to those people that want a quick fix, but it takes an effort to do anything like this. And I can tell you that even some of the supplements that you just mentioned, Robert, those really aren't going to slow your brain's aging. What they're going to do is they're going to provide the body and the brain with the nutrients that it needs. But if you really want to slow things down, you need to use it more often. You need to develop it and exercise it. You know,
keep it young.
If you don't use it, you're going to lose it, type of thing. It's just that old scenario. So wow. Do puzzles, you know, play chess and exercise. And that's going to be more important for your brain than mm-hmm. anything else. And I can tell you, I've got patients that are in their 60s and 70s and 80s that do these types of things, and their brains are sharper than the kids and their grandkids. So the brain, to me, is the most important thing. Again, in the words of James Allen, right, if there's something wrong with the body, you got to fix the computer program first, and that's the brain. You got to help the brain get fixed first so we can help the body get fixed. So to me, it all comes back to the brain. It's very, very important. So, yes, nutrients are important, but so is the activities we partake in on a regular basis.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing is, if we talk about some building blocks of physicality, it's one thing to do and provide those things, but if you don't utilize it, right? You could take all the greatest stuff for your muscles and you never exercise. How far are those things going to go ultimately? And so it's an important aspect of that exercise context and concept, mental exercise. Physical exercise, emotional exercise, spiritual exercise, all of these things cannot be overlooked in terms of importance. In fact, they are primary, along with the things that we know to reduce toxin exposure, help to remove the things that we have been exposed to inadvertently or purposefully by medicine, i.e. vaccinations we've talked about. And so all of this is advanced medicine. Not every doctor gets this yet, even though they should.
Well, God willing, more and more people are getting it, and more and more doctors are getting it, more and more people are getting it, more and more governmental officials are getting it, things like. Robert, I'd like to distract a little bit from our conversation right now, because this comes back to the measles component. I was looking mm-hmm. something up, And in Wikipedia, which we know is Wikipedia is such an authoritative source, right? Wikipedia actually mentions this, and there's so many people that misunderstand this. They talk about airborne disease. Can we talk about that for 3 seconds? Do we have enough time?
Yeah, no, we're good. We got a couple of minutes before break.
Okay. So when we talk about airborne diseases, and they talk about measles being airborne disease and chickenpox and all the stuff that Wikipedia kind of mentions, and they do put down in some cases. They did use that language as a default. But I want people to understand there are only three things that can be transmitted airborne, okay? Now, those three things are Ebola, anthrax, and tuberculosis. Nothing else is airborne, okay? I don't care what anybody says, it's just not true. Now, yes, if you sneeze on somebody, or you sneeze and the particulate matter that comes out of your body, and let's say you have the flu or you have chickenpox, and it lands on a doorknob, and then somebody else comes along to that doorknob and touches that doorknob and opens the door and walks in and then picks up an apple and bites an apple without washing their hands, then it's transmitted. So if you want to call that airborne transmission, then fine, that's airborne transmission. But truly stuff that's floating on the air and that you can breathe and it gets, that you can get, it's only Ebola, tuberculosis, and anthrax. To the best of my knowledge, those are the only three. And I remember we were, this was a lecture that I had attended from an infectious disease specialist, and he went through all this. This was years and years ago, and I think I was an intern at the time, or maybe I was a first-year resident. But anyway, anthrax, Ebola, and tuberculosis, everything else is not airborne. It's transmittable through the vector, through the air, but you need another vector. In other words, it has to land. The particulate matter has to land somewhere, and you have to touch it and ingest it, or you know, gets on your body somehow. It is not inhaled and causes problems. So I want people to be aware of that.
Also, should you become exposed, it doesn't guarantee that you will succumb to it. It depends on a number of factors that go back to Antoine Béchamp, the law of the terrain. How do you respond? Are you capable of responding in a way that you hardly even notice it? You break out maybe with a little sniffle versus it's devastating to you. And that has everything to do with the advanced medicine in the body. What can we ban to solve all of our problems? We talk about use it or lose it, as Dr. Batar says. We'll tell you after the break.
Great heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Scott Bell Show.
All right, upcoming events, September 22nd and 23rd, the Trinity Live Conference. That's the new incarnation of the Health Freedom Expo. Hey, are you back around September 22nd, 23rd? Because I'd love to see you up in Chicago, Schaumburg, Illinois, Dr. Batar. I don't know where you're traveling to and when, so I just throw it out there.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to be in Montana at a special conference for some of the dealing with emotional issues with and chronic disease, how to help individuals to overcome that. So I'll be in Montana, I think the 25th, 26th, 27th it is, or something like that. So
all right.
Right before that, yeah.
Well, let's talk about it, because, yeah, there's an event that maybe you can make it in Chicago before that. I don't know. We'll talk after the hours. But also, there's an International Iridology Conference in October. Y'all check it out in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. Now, what should we ban to make everything all better? Medical Express says we should ban drive-thrus. If we would only ban the drive-thrus, communities would be healthier, as if they're not going to then park and walk into McDonald's and eat the same burgers. Come on, really?
I like that. Wait, what's wrong with burgers, though? Why do we want to ban burgers?
Well, it isn't. For me, it's not about that. It's about, you know, how those animals were raised. Obviously, what's in them, and that's the big issue. But for them, of course, it's about the drive-through. Not thinking clearly that the same addiction to those fast foods are going to still be there, and people will get out of their cars and walk in if they have to.
Yeah, and so this is exactly the same thing when it comes to the Second Amendment, right? The right to bear arms. We make it an issue with the, you know, I'm sure I may upset some people here, but it's the same thing. If you think that banning firearms is going to reduce the violence, then we need to start banning spoons, because that will help to reduce our obesity issue as well. you know, it's not a logical argument. It's not the weapon that's the problem. It's the people that are using the weapons that are the problem. And banning them or making them more difficult to get, you think mm-hmm. the people that are actually utilizing these weapons for violence are getting them through legal means? Most of these weapons are, in fact, the vast majority of them have not been used for legal means and acquired by legal means. And then you've got the issue of these people being on the various types of pharmaceuticals for mental illness and not being adequately, those mental illnesses not having been adequately addressed and being treated with pharmaceuticals and not, you know, not looking at the actual source.
There you go, using common sense, the sense that God gave you in that context. A lot of people are not. They're just emotionally reacting. How about this ban? California bill seeks to restrict restaurants serving kids sugary drinks. I would say
that is a good ban.
You like that? I would say ban the parents from being parents if that's the case. If you're willing to give your kids these sugary corn syrup GMO drinks, really? What kind of parent does that to their kid?
Well, I think that they're okay. So you're actually right in that point, Robert. But I think the way I looked at this is they're banning the restaurants from being able to serve it. But you're right, because that's not going to prevent the parent from going out and buying it from the store. So that you're absolutely right. It's good though that. It's kind of like when the restaurants started banning cigarette smoking, right?
Right,
it doesn't
right.
prevent an individual from going out and buying the cigarettes, but it does deter the ability to get it accessed quickly. So there's some interesting things about this. I think personal responsibility should be the first and foremost thing that's emphasized.
Right.
We need to be encouraging and indoctrinating more importance on taking personal responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where we're lacking as a society. And you can't rely on the government to do all those things for you. And even if you do, and even if the government has the right idea and the right intention, they still mm-hmm. can't really replace your personal responsibility. I have always been a very big advocate of taking personal responsibility for
sure.
everything you do.
What about this, Dr. Bitar? What if the government said, we will not sell you a soft drink, kid, unless your parents give you permission to do it? Then at least it's on the parents.
I agree with you. Yeah.
There you go. All right. So we kind of compromise. Super Don, what do you think?
What do I
think? Not much. Yeah, not much, apparently.
Three.
That was busted theme. And also that Steve Feld song, everybody has to take a shot of silver hydrosol or something now because Super Don wasn't paying attention. All right. Well, folks, no, don't be sorry. It's funny. Listen, Dr. Bitar, always an amazing time when we get together. I'm sorry you weren't able to be in person with us, but any event that we can get together, we want to do it, and we'll be keeping people up to date on it. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Robert. I'm glad you said that went well.
Yeah. Remember, robertscottbell.com, advancedmedicine.com. Loads of good stuff there, even when we're not on the air or if Dr. Bitar is not here. But he'll be here next week again with more advanced medicine. Tell them what they need to know because we got to go.
The power to heal is unequivocally yours.
Amen, brother.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.